Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello everyone and welcome to this week's edition of the Spanish Football Podcast with me, Phil Kitramanidis, and producer Alex Kirkland doing the pod with me today because Sydney is out and about, really. It's probably the busiest weekend of his illustrious career. It's up then.
I would say that when he sent us the itinerary for this weekend, handwritten in his notebook, which I affectionately describe as resembling a serial killer's journal, I think it's the most extraordinary itinerary he has ever constructed. And this is a man, look, we know the lengths that this man has gone to in the name of Spanish football. So to say that this was extreme, even by Sid's standards, I mean, that gives you an idea of just what he's been up to this weekend.
Madrid to Eibar, Eibar to Madrid, Madrid to Andorra, Andorra to Madrid, Madrid to Sevilla, Sevilla to Madrid is what Sid Lowe is currently in the middle of. At the time of recording, he's on his way back from Andorra, where he went to watch Gerard Piqué's team and speak to their manager. Anyway, we'll hear from Sid in just a moment because he desperately wanted to be involved in the podcast, so we're going to hear from him at two junctions in the pod. But me and Al are going to keep you company for the next half an hour or so. And in doing so, we're going to start off by telling you what happened on match day 34. The Friday night game saw Celta beat Levante by 2-0. Magnificent goal by Bryce Mendes. Barry Aspas with his 11th assist of the season, the leading assist provider in La Liga. Then on Saturday, Sid went up to Eibar to watch Eibar against Alaves and was rewarded by seeing a magnificent hat-trick from Kike. Eibar with their first win since the 3rd of January, beating Alaves by 3-0. Big result at the bottom of the table. Big result at both ends of the table was Atletico Madrid beating Elche by 1-0. Elche missing a 91st-minute penalty, which would have caused havoc at the top of the table. Huesca are picking up a much-needed win for them at home to Real Sociedad, and Real Madrid grinding out a 2-0 home win against Osasuna. The goals were relatively late, although the performance wasn't bad at all from Real Madrid. Then Sunday, Valladolid 1, Betis 1. It's Betis's 6th consecutive draw. They've never ever drawn 6 consecutive games in La Liga. Villarreal beating Getafe by 1-0. Cadiz beating Granada by the same scoreline, virtually all but mathematically guaranteeing their presence in La Liga for next season. Cadiz, so I think everyone's pretty pleased about that. Barca beat Valencia by 3-2 at Mestalla, despite trailing in the second half. They fought back, but then had to survive a late surge from Valencia. And then on Monday, Sydney's heading to this one this evening to see Sevilla against Athletic. Sevilla are still very much in the title race. We know that. Although if they don't win today, it's going to be a little bit more difficult for them, because at the top of the table, Atletico Madrid have played 34 with 76 points. Real Madrid have played 34, 74 points. Barcelona played 34, 74 points. And Sevilla played 33 with 70 points. Al, we're going to talk about that in a moment, but let's bring in Sydney. Sydney, we've missed you. We are missing you, but it's great to have you with us. Tell us, how much league is there?
There is so much league, isn't there? And it's really exciting. And it's really exciting to be going into these 4 final games with the teams this close. Obviously, let's see just how close Sevilla can be tonight. If they win tonight, then it really tightens it up. And there's lots of nice ways of looking at it. And I think some of them, because it's interconnected, of course, I think some of the assumptions that are made, apart from the fact that they get broken after just one game because surprising results happen. So, for example, last Thursday, we'd have said, well, Barcelona are probably favourites. We didn't expect them to lose to Granada. And you look back on it now, you think even drawing against Granada would have been something, but they were beaten by them. That changes the dynamics of everything. But also because it's all so tightly connected. And to try and, I was trying to work this out and like kind of how I visualise this. And actually, you know, what this means. So you look at it and people say, well, Atletico Madrid are the only team with the league title in their own hands. Well, they are, but they play Barcelona next weekend. And then, of course, you get people from the Barcelona side of it saying, well, so now Barcelona have effectively got it in their own hands because if they win every game, they go ahead of Atletico Madrid. But, of course, if they do that, what they actually achieve, I mean, apart from the fact, obviously, of putting themselves in a good position in the league title races, actually, if they beat Atletico Madrid, they put the league title race in a position in which it's in Real Madrid's hands. But, of course, for that to happen, Real Madrid have to beat Sevilla next weekend. And next weekend is going to be absolutely brilliant. I mean, my only regret, I suppose, is that they're two different days. They're not back-to-back games, which would have really created a sense of kind of interconnected fates. Maybe even kicking off at the same time would have been fun, although I suppose then you have the frustration of not being able to watch them. But it's really, really exciting. And not only that, but you look at them and you think, well, these are teams that you're not sure that their team's capable of winning every game between now and the end of the season. Now, of course, they are capable. The way they've been playing doesn't suggest that. Look at this weekend. Barcelona really didn't look like they were going to react until they were given that absurd penalty from Toni Lato. And has anyone done the joke yet? Toni Abril Lato? No? Okay, just me. You know, Real Madrid actually should have put Osasuna out of sight in the first half, but in the second half, it did feel like it was slipping away from them until they got that goal. And that's, you know, 14 minutes from the end of the game. He's not really late, but it was getting to the point where you were starting to think, wow, I wonder if it's happening again. I wonder if another 0-0 draw is going to cost them. Atletico Madrid started really, really well, should have been well ahead. Obviously, you have the Suarez offside goal, you have the Suarez chance that for some reason he goes to the near post rather than the far post. Then you get Llorente score, and it feels like Atletico are going to do this comfortably. But then Atletico did, and I don't want to labour this point because I know we've talked about it before, but that thing of trying to protect a lead or trying to change things and the message sent, I think is a dubious one. Now, obviously, they got away with it, but they got away with it because in the last minute, there's a penalty that hits the post. By the way, that's three in a row against Atletico Madrid that haven't been scored. Two of them very, very late in games. Oblak saved the previous two. This one hits the post. Probably shouldn't have been given anyway for what it's worth because it comes off a free kick for a handball by Trippier, which isn't a handball. The handball for the penalty itself is baffling. I mean, it's as bad as the latter one, possibly even worse from Llorente. It's completely bizarre. And they get away with it. And Simeone's reaction, I think, tells you everything about that and tells you how much it means. And he says after the game, it's time to stop thinking. It's time for doing. Well, yeah. And yet this is a week after he said the team that's mentally strong enough is the one that's going to win this league. I suppose he's decided actually all of those thoughts are far too terrifying. And it's very, very close. I still think Real Madrid are favourites to win the league.
Wow. Thank you, Sydney. That's a bit of a bombshell to end on. He's been saying it for a while. Real Madrid are still favourites to win the league. Is this just Sid sort of almost blindly backing Real Madrid whenever they're not necessarily favourites because they have in the past been able to pull the rabbit out of the hat and win when it doesn't look like they're going to? Or is there any sort of method in this perceived madness?
Every single weekend, Sid messages us saying Atletico are going to blow this while Atleti yes. are playing. He did so again this weekend. They did not, in fact, blow it, although, to be fair to him, they came very, very, very close. They couldn't have come much closer to blowing it. To be honest, I mean, I change my mind every weekend. I don't know about you, but I literally change my... No, not even every weekend, on a game-by-game basis. I think this weekend, probably several
during
times.
During different games as well, that's the thing.
This is definitely the best, most exciting title race we've had since we started the podcast, right? Without question, and going back a lot further, of course. I mean, it's such a shame that fans aren't in the stadiums to see it. Although maybe I do have this sort of suspicion that part of the reason why it is so tight is because of the unique circumstances of this season. And would this have happened if it was a normal season? Well, probably not. But no, I go back and forth. I mean, you know, just to sort of go through those games again quickly this weekend, watching Atletico on Saturday, watching the first half, I thought they're good. They're flying. They were approaching it in exactly the right way, and that they were really going for the game. And I thought, okay, I think that wobble that they had, they've come through it and they're going to get the job done now. But then you watch them in the second half when, again, they come so close to screwing it up, and it's only a huge slice of good fortune with that missed penalty that meant that they didn't. That makes you have doubts again. Then you're watching Real Madrid, and again, I thought they were really, really good in the first half, even if they didn't score early on against Osasuna. I thought they were kind of approaching the game in the right way and playing the right way. You questioned it at times again during that game, because, as I say, that goal didn't come. Eventually, it didn't, from a fairly unlikely source as well. So you think, okay, typical Real Madrid, kind of finding a way to get the job done. And then you watch Barca, and I have to say, I mean, when Gabriel Paulista scored that goal, I really thought they were out of it. They were done. But they again managed to dig deep and find a way back into it. So yes, I changed my mind about who was going to win the league, not just at various points during each of those three games, I think.
Barca looking out of it when Gabriel had scored, not least because of what had happened on Thursday evening when they had conceded two goals in the second half to lose at home to Granada for the first time ever. And when they conceded at home to Granada, I mean, they just fell apart. They went to absolute pieces. Granada scored a second. They could have scored a third as well. It was very impressive to see them actually manage to regroup when Valencia had scored and go get the goal, get themselves in front, get a third as well.
Because you really thought, here we go again, right? You thought it was the same pattern as the Granada game. I thought it was quite interesting, by the way, listening to Gerard Piqué talking, doing the post-match flash interview, and he was asked, if you go and beat Atletico next weekend, you know, is that in the driving seat? And he said, look, to be honest, having seen what we've seen, I'd love to say yes, but I can't.
He said, in most seasons it would be. In most seasons it would be. But in this season of all seasons, it probably isn't. And we're talking about next weekend because next weekend is the big one. It's huge. It's monstrous, as Sydney was alluding to. And we're all very excited. Barca against Atleti on Saturday and then Real Madrid against Sevilla on Sunday. I'm pleased. I actually think it's quite good that they're on two separate days.
Let's draw out the tension and the drama. Yeah. Let's not get it all done at once.
There is a tendency here in Spain to compare high-performing centre-backs always to Franz Beckenbauer. And so if we do that, shall we call him Eder Militao-Bauer?
No.
Okay. Eder Militao is playing really, really well. He's played, I think, has he played the last nine games?
What's happened? Because he's been, since he came into the team, he's been basically flawless. Like he's been one of Madrid's best players in pretty much every one of those games. And he's looked like, he's looked like the player that they were kind of expecting when they broke their kind of their transfer record for a defender, because he's looked like the complete centre back. He's quick and he's strong and he's a threat in the air in the opposition box as well. And his sort of positioning has been good. His reading of the game has been good. I genuinely don't know if it's just the case that he hasn't had a lot of opportunities before this. He's certainly never had a run in the team like we're seeing now. But, you know, he has played games for Real Madrid over the last couple of years. He has played a number of games. It's not like he's never played. He has played and he hasn't been very good previously. I don't want to be too kind of revisionist about it and say that he's just been waiting for his chance, because we've seen him play before and he hasn't done well. But this time he really has. And I mean, that this was kind of the culmination of that run of performances, because, of course, it wasn't just that he scored the opening goal, and what a good header it was. It was the third header that he'd had. Yeah. It was the third header he'd had, and he'd had another really good chance as well that wasn't a header to score. He was literally Real Madrid's biggest goal threat, as well as being good in defence. I find him quite an interesting character. We were talking about this, weren't we? Watching his post-match interview, and again, he just seems like incredibly nervous. Like at one point, he literally said, I don't have the words. Like, and of course, he's not speaking in his first language, because his first language is Portuguese, but still, like, he just seemed, just very, very kind of nervous and shy and a little bit kind of awkward. And it made me think back to that famous, his presentation press conference at the Bernabeu, which had to be drawn to an end early because he basically felt faint and almost kind of fainted and said that he couldn't carry on. And I wonder, I don't know if this is a... I mean, he's relatively young. He's not a teenager, but he's in
his 23.
Yeah, exactly. He's not a kid. Yes, yes. it's especially when he's wearing those brilliant big sunglasses that in that shot that's now become basically a meme. I don't know. I'm quite sort of fascinated by him by him now and exactly what is behind this transformation. But it has genuinely raised the question. Now, it's a question that may not need to be answered now because, of course, Rafael Varane went off with some discomfort, and we're not sure if he's going to be available or not. We'll have to see about that. But if that hadn't been the case, it would have raised the serious question about whether Ramos comes straight back into the team because Militao is playing so well.
He is. As you mentioned, Rafael Varane going off with a bit of a knock. Real Madrid have, before that magnificent weekend of La Liga action, the small matter of a Champions League semi-final second leg at Stamford Bridge on Wednesday night against Chelsea. People suggesting that their performance against Sevilla will be heavily conditioned by what happens on Wednesday night. If they go flying out of the Champions League, they could approach the game with low confidence, low morale, and it might give Sevilla a chance. If they win, they'll be boosted, they'll be buoyant, they'll be desperate to grind out a result against Sevilla. It's going to be very, very interesting to see what happens on Wednesday and then subsequently at the weekend. We didn't mention Messi and his free kick.
I mean, as always, taking him for the free kick was great, wasn't it? I mean, some people have raised the point that there's this kind of cliche now, and you heard it in the Spanish TV commentary at the weekend before this free kick, describing these free kicks from Messi as being like half a penalty. And that isn't true, because if you look at the stats, I mean, he has literally taken like 35 free kicks or something this season, and he scored two, I think. So it's not. I mean, it's not really like a penalty. And yet, when you see him step up with that kind of confidence and just stroke that ball, because he really does stroke it, doesn't he? It's so kind of gentle. And I mean, this one was, you know, in off the post, so it wasn't even in the corner. It was even a little bit more extreme than that. I mean, it's one of the best things to watch in football, I think, when Messi tucks away a free kick like that, again, because he just makes it look so incredibly easy.
If you want to ask us questions, please do so. If there's things that we haven't mentioned on the podcast that you think we absolutely should, ask us a question. We'll talk about it on our Q&A pod that is out every Tuesday for patrons. Patrons get daily bonus content, bonus podcasts, a couple of bonus podcasts a week at least, sometimes three. And yeah, you also get producer Al's world famous near daily paper review. So well worth joining.
They got
us
one this very morning. There was a paper review.
Of course they did. Of course they did. So come and join us at patreon.com/TSFP. As a sort of segue to talking about the relegation battle, just a quick word on Valencia. They're 6 points above the drop. They're probably safe, but they're not definitely safe. And we'll talk about the relegation battle in a moment. I'd be interesting, and I know we have lots and lots and lots of Valencia supporting listeners, and I know we don't often always dedicate Valencia that much space on the Monday pod, because there's a lot to talk about in La Liga and Valencia this season. Well, it's been difficult to necessarily fit them in, but I don't know if Valencia fans, and I'm putting this question out and I'd like you to try and answer us, send us a tweet, send us a message on Patreon if you're a patron. Do you think it could be almost a good thing if Valencia get relegated? Because it almost certainly comes flying back up, as Espanyol and Mallorca are doing, and it might have Peter Lim rethink things, and it might get him out of the club if that's what fans want. I don't know. Maybe I think quite a few Valencia fans would take that hit to go down, reassess the whole thing, and then come immediately, hopefully, back up.
I just don't know if you can take that risk. They probably would come straight back up. If Espanyol and Mallorca can do it, there's no reason why Valencia couldn't do it either. But can you take that risk, whatever that small chance is that they don't? Because if Valencia don't come straight back up, I mean, anyway, like you say, I'd be interested to hear what listeners think. But I think you're always better off staying up. I think there are too many kind of assumptions built into that premise that if I were a Valencia fan, I wouldn't necessarily be wanting to rely on.
Like we said, they are 6 points above the relegation zone. They are probably going to stay up. They've got some big games coming up against Valladolid and Sevilla and then Eibar and then Huesca. So they're playing.
And they've still got some really good players as well. I mean, when you see Carlos Soler, you know, spank that one in from 30 yards, you just think they've. I mean, I know that they are really, really depleted from where they were, say, 2 years ago, but they've still got a pretty strong team. And like you say, the fact that we haven't probably talked about them too much on the podcast this season is because their season's been such a slog. Mm. And like you say, they've been kind of loitering there on the verge of being dragged into the relegation fight and never, I mean, so far, never quite being properly dragged in, but it's always been there in the background.
Mm. All right, let's talk a bit more about the relegation battle and talk to Sydney again. Sydney, tell us about your magical trip to Eibar.
Eibar turned out to be a lot more magical than I thought it would be, to be perfectly honest with you. I obviously went there with the idea that this might be the game that pulled Alaves clear. They'd not been beaten in four games since Javi Calleja took over. And a couple of weeks ago, Eibar more or less admitted that it was gone. José Luis Mendilibar talked about the difficulties they would face if they were going to turn this round. And yet, this was a performance in which Eibar were fantastic and Alaves barely competed. And then Eibar won the lap after 2.5 minutes. They won the game 3-0 I was wondering this. It may well be the best hat-trick I've seen live. Now, at this point, obviously, I probably have to throw in the asterisks and that whole category of football, which is except Messi, because I imagine that over the years, I've probably seen Messi score a better hat-trick than this. But it was an absolutely brilliant hat-trick from Kike Garcia. The first goal controlled twice on his chest, controlled on his chest, and then kind of passed to himself on the chest to finish. The second is a brilliant half volley. The outside of his right foot onto a cross, gets across the defender and finishes it fantastically. Then the third is him picking the ball up almost on the byline and coming back in and then bending a fabulous shot into the far corner. Just completely brilliant hat-trick from a guy who at times can look like a bit of a lump. Although actually one of the things that was interesting about watching him up close is just how good he is, how well he uses his body, how he holds the ball up, how he brings others into play, and he was absolutely fantastic all the way through the game, which we can confirm on our internal TSFP communications channel that I was saying this even before, not before he'd scored, because that would have meant saying it before 2 minutes and I hadn't had time to say it at that point, but before he got the second and certainly before he got the third. And it was interesting listening to Mendilibar after the game talk about Kike Garcia as the guy that kind of embodies what Eibar are about, the degree of work, the commitment, the willingness to try and perform in the way that his manager wants. And he says, you know, he's a guy that can drive you mad at times because sometimes he tries to do too much, sometimes he makes mistakes, sometimes he gets it wrong. He said, but I'd rather that a million times than someone I'm constantly having to tell to pull their finger out. And he was brilliant. And the reaction to it afterwards was lovely as well. Obviously, you know, the stadium was empty, but he had people in those tower blocks giving him a standing ovation as he went off. Dimitrovic came running over and jumped into his arms. He was given the match ball. He looked really kind of almost humbled by it all. And then, of course, that question, which is there now actually a chance for Eibar to survive? And I think probably a more important question is what does it mean if they go down? And because they've used their money well over these years, because they've consolidated so well in the first division, they have a chance of coming back, which simply would not have been the case had they gone down at the end of that first season, which of course they did, and they were rescued by the administrative relegation for Elche. And they probably won't survive now because they still got 4 points that they have to pick up on the teams around them to get out of it. But as Mendilibar said, he said, look, the fact is we've gone 16 games without winning and we still got hope. So what that tells us is the teams around us haven't exactly been brilliant either. And you look at the relegation battle, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I believe Valladolid came out of the relegation zone with a relatively late equaliser. Huesca came out of it and went back into it again. Cadiz are safe now, but you know, there's a chance perhaps for Eibar to survive. Alaves looked like they could have pulled to a position of virtual safety and they didn't, and they're very definitely in it. Getafe have still got a small cushion, but they're in it as well. So it's going to be very, very exciting down the bottom as well as up at the top.
Well, it is, Sid. Thank you. Very, very exciting at the bottom of the table. Let me just tell you how the bottom looks. Eibar are bottom with 26 points. Elche on 30, Huesca on 30, and then just out of the relegation zone, Valladolid on 31, Alaves on 31, Getafe on 34, and Valencia on 36. We're just about including them. They should be all right, but oof, it's extremely tight at the bottom of the table. That result for Eibar is absolutely huge, and it gives them a little bit of hope. A little bit of hope.
Not much, though. I mean, like you say, they're still 4 points behind.
It was quite dismissive. Mm. I mean, yeah, I don't know.
I think they're gone. I think they're gone, and I think it's between the other four teams, Elche, Huesca, Valladolid, and Alaves, for those last two spots, and unless something truly remarkable happens.
Okay, I won't ask you who do you want to go down. Who do you want to save?
No, we don't want any teams to go down. Yeah. We don't wish that misfortune on. I mean,
there's a couple I wouldn't mind, but I'm not going to say that.
Listen, we like Alaves, don't we? We like Alaves. Yeah, if only because, I mean, the opportunities for you to say one of your favourite words in Spanish football
would be
significantly reduced if they were down in Segunda, and we don't want that to happen. None of us want that to happen. So for that reason alone, I want Alaves to stay up. And then, I mean, honestly, between Elche, Huesca and Valladolid, I don't know. Do you know what? My kind of affection for Pacheta is growing on a week-by-week basis. I was watching him being interviewed on the telly late on, I think it was Saturday night, and he came across as so really quite charming and funny and a little bit eccentric. Yes. And I don't know, I just got a really good vibe off of him. And so if my allegiances lie anywhere in the relegation battle, it's probably with him.
Possibly not with the side who consistently refused to credit Sydney.
Well, let's see what happens, because as we know,
looking at you, Getafe.
We haven't mentioned this, but the restrictions on the number of press that are allowed into La Liga games are being limited this coming weekend. Even if fans aren't yet allowed back in, the press are at least going to be allowed back in their usual numbers. So we are on tenterhooks, waiting to find out if Cid will be let back into Getafe, or if there will be some sort of vengeance for the sort of the campaign that he has waged against them over the last few months. If he's been blacklisted by Getafe and all the rest of us get in and he doesn't, we have to wait and see.
Getafe against Eibar, 2 p.m. on Sunday. If there's not space for Cid in that, then it's definitely some kind of a campaign against him. In the Segunda División, Espanyol and Mallorca are both heading back to the Primera. As we said, Espanyol beat Malaga 3-0. Mallorca beat Mirandés 2-1. So they're on 77 points and 71 points respectively. Third place Almeria, who are now coached by Rubi, are on 63 points after drawing 2-2 with Oviedo on Saturday. Massive comeback from Oviedo, which Sydney was very happy about. Rayo are a point outside the playoffs, but they play tonight at relegation-threatened Sabadell. It is massive week. Massive, massive week for Spanish sides. We've got tonight Sevilla against Athletic Club in a big game for the La Liga title race. Then on Wednesday, you've got Chelsea against Real Madrid. On Thursday, you've got Arsenal against Villarreal. And then Saturday, Barcelona, Atletico. Sunday, Real Madrid, Sevilla. It's going to be very, very exciting. We'll have a Q&A pod out for patrons, as always, later this week. We'll have a bonus pod talking Champions League and Europa League. And don't forget to check out our latest episode of TSFP Presents Sliding Doors. We discuss the Spain national team. There's a clip here on the Monday podcast feed. If that tickles your fancy, come and join us at patreon.com/TSFP. Ow! Lovely to do the pod with you, my friend. We haven't done it for a long, long time.
It's my pleasure, Kitro. Now that we often do record pods remotely, there are fewer occasions when Cid can't join us. So, but yeah, it's nice to be here, man.
I know. Cid will be back later on this week over at Patreon, and he will give us a full rundown of his magical / completely insane trip across the length and breadth of the Iberian Peninsula this week. So come and join us on Patreon. Otherwise, we'll be back here as ever on Monday speaking about Spanish football. Bye-bye.
Bye.